not, or off a point and whatnot. So,
okay.
All right, guys, here we go. Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest Joshua Howe of Raptors Republic, B-Ball Breakdown, and also the host of Writers Right. What's up, fellas?
I'm doing awesome. How are you guys doing?
Josh, pleasure to have you on this pod. I know I had you on Full Access Hoops earlier this summer. I'm excited, you know? 6666.
We are talking Raptors today. Before we get started, as always, check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But we are talking Raptors. Last year, 59-23, first in the East, you know, obviously knocked out in the second round, swept by the Cavs. Excellent regular season. The bench really impressed. What were your thoughts about last year, Josh?
Last season might have been my favorite Raptors season that I've ever watched. Man, there was so much going on, so many more ups than downs, which was great. Everyone stayed pretty healthy. The Raptors totally changed their style of play to a more modern style, more ball movement, more threes, more off-ball action. DeRozan came in, and everybody was concerned about him specifically because of the way his game was. He's never been a great off-ball player. So what did DeRozan do? He did what not many people expected. He actually just improved his playmaking so that he didn't have to have the ball outside of his hands. And he became a really good playmaker and, you know, put up career assist numbers. So that was awesome. That was really cool. You know, the bench mob became a thing. Just so much fun watching them blow out teams and help the starters get back into games sometimes. Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl became like basically a buddy cop movie every night. Fred VanVleet became, you know, the plus minus god. It's just so much fun. CJ Miles is the bench dad, basically. It was a great season. I never would have predicted that they would have won 59 games, which is what they got to. And I think I predicted 50 before the season. And even then, I felt maybe a little optimistic in that. Yeah, I mean, you know, other than that, I mean, it was just like, what a season, man. Oh, and OG got snubbed from a lot of rookie awards. Just throwing that out there.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely last season they flipped the script. Obviously, the Raptors have all the last several years have been a top team in the East, always competitive. And then last year they definitely took a jump. As you mentioned, the bench unit is what stuck out. It's what set them apart. You know, when DeRozan and Lowry came off the floor, the offense didn't really skip a beat. The ball movement last year was a lot better. This was the second best offensive rating team in the NBA, fifth in defensive rating, fourth in attendance too in the league, which is something I think that bodes well for Toronto, especially obviously now they have Kawhi. But people come out to Toronto. That place gets rocking, and they were competitive. As you mentioned, OG really impressed as a rookie. Some of the guys they brought in, CJ Miles, I thought was a good bench piece. The three-point percentage, you know, they were in the middle of the pack of three-point percentage, but they were shooting, I think, the third most threes per game of any team.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, Josh, they really changed their offense. The ball was moving a lot better, and, of course, they ended up finishing with the second-best record, or the best record in the East with, you know, 59-23. And obviously, the one hurdle this team constantly has is the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron – well, mostly LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he's no longer in the East, so – maybe this is time for them to actually run this conference.
Josh, what were your thoughts on Serge Ibaka last year? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about his situation, him kind of declining. What kind of happened last year with him?
Yeah, I mean, Ibaka is an interesting case. There'd be some nights that he played really well, and those nights tended to be after, like, you know, a couple days or a day or so of rest. He'd play really well when he was able to get that rest and not have played heavy minutes a couple nights before or whatever, and, you know, and then he'd be really good. It was the nights where, you know, they were playing back-to-backs or you know, however many games and however many nights. Those were the times where Ibaka really really seemed to fall off and just really looked old, even though he's not that old. I think he just turned 29, I believe.
Depending what you think about his birth certificate.
Yeah, I was about to say, are there rumors that he's older?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was kind of weird. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but, you know, he's been through a lot of seasons where he played the, you know, down low and took a lot of banging with the other bigs in Oklahoma City when he was more of a defensive first guy, and you know, before he really expanded his jump shot out to where it is now, because even now, like, his one of his biggest just key elements to his game that really helps the starting unit was his ability to shoot the ball. Some nights he would come out and he'd be shooting, like, he'd be the best 3-point, other than Kyle Lowry, of course, he'd be the best 3-point shooter in the starting lineup, which, you know, some nights, you know, you might find that slightly concerning, but the Raptors knew that when they were going in to change their style. And so Ibaka had a lot of those looks, and for the most part, he made a lot of them. But yeah, he just had a bit of an up and down season, and I think maybe it's just because of some of the miles on him, and you know, the days that he got rest, he was really great, and obviously it showed. His game really took a hit in the playoffs, where he played really well the first two games against Washington, really, really well. And then after that, he sort of fell off. And I think he had one or two games maybe after that where he was okay. But for the most part, he kind of fallen out of the rotation. Not fallen out of the rotation, but he basically felt like he fell out of the rotation. I think that's why his minutes this season need to be monitored. And hopefully he won't be playing quite as many this year.
Josh, do you think he's better at the five in today's NBA than the four, the traditional four that he's played most of his career?
It depends on the lineups. There were, last season, whenever he played alongside Poeltl, those lineups never worked. You know, so I mean, there's been a lot of talk before this season, right now, that he'd be a good backup center and play with the bench unit. Now that Poeltl's gone, and I think that could be interesting. I think it could be good. It depends. I mean, Ibaka's never been a really great rebounder. He's a pretty solid rim protector. It depends, again, who's around him to help him out there. But, yeah, I mean, I think you don't want to have a lot of him at those minutes. But, you know, putting him there is not – it's going to be fine. I mean, I think it's going to be fine for a little while. But, yeah, you don't want to have him there a lot. Maybe in spurts, that's why the backup center spot is probably better for him, just because he'd be playing against second units. And that's not nearly as dangerous. But yeah, I don't think you want to have him playing the center spot a ton of time against starting players.
Gotcha. Moving on to a more positive note, highlight of last season for the Raptors.
For me, it was, I mean, so specifically, I'll say the Houston game in March. That was a super fun game. OG didn't play. He was out. And other than that, it went basically perfectly. Actually, Malcolm Miller came up and filled some of those minutes. And he was actually really good in that game. He had a couple of threes and had some really nice cuts and got to the rim. And he was really good, which was cool. And yeah, I mean, it was just a great game. Harden had an MVP-like game, and it was in Toronto, and it was sold out, and the arena was rocking. And DeRozan actually played pretty well defensively that game. The last play came down to DeRozan guarding Harden, you know, two Los Angeles guys. It was really awesome. And the bench mob, you know, they showed out in that game, which really gave me, and I think a lot of other people, confidence that they could come out in the playoffs and hold their own as the bench mob. You didn't necessarily have to have starters playing with them all the time to keep them afloat. Fred VanVleet was like picking up Chris Paul and in full court and forcing turnovers. And, it was pretty intense. It was pretty crazy. It was just a back and forth game. The Raptors really hit them hard in the first half, and then Houston inevitably came out and played much better in the second half, and it got close. And yeah, it came down to the last play, and the Raptors were able to pull it out. And it was just, I think that was the highlight of the season for me.
All right, so for me, it comes on January 1st of 2018, and that was the overtime win the Raptors had over the Bucks. DeRozan had 52 points, 8 assists. I'm pretty sure he had like a huge dunk too late in that game, if I'm recalling correctly. It was one of those games where like I actually was able to watch the Raptors fully and that Bucks team, which I was kind of high on last year. And it was one of those games where I just watching DeRozan, you know, I think he shot 50% from three that game. And it was just like, wow, DeRozan has really evolved into this kind of complete player. And, you know, it was fun watching him take over late in the game.
Yeah, both great choices. I went with just a bench unit, the bench mob, like Josh has mentioned before. And I just think the rookie season OG had was very impressive and gives them a nice little building block moving forward. And picking where they were in the draft, getting a player like that, I think is always a success. Back to a negative note, though, disappointment of last season.
Disappointment. I'm going to say, I think it's, for me, it's just, it's the obvious. It has to be the way they lost to Cleveland. Not even just that they lost to Cleveland in the playoffs, but how they lost to Cleveland. They basically just, it's so difficult because I hate a lot of the times the armchair psychology stuff is like a little bit much, I think, for people who are just like watching guys on TV to really come up with. But, you know, we've watched the Raptors, this core specifically, play LeBron for the past several years, and they just never seem to be able to get over this like mental hurdle, and it just shows in the body language and stuff. And you know, it happened again. I picked the Raptors in six. Obviously, they didn't. That didn't happen. But a lot of people, I think, were picking Toronto, and obviously, this was the worst Cavs team, debatably, that LeBron had ever had. And woof. Yeah, I mean, the game one, I think, was the worst. The game one is when, you know, the game they should have had. They were up big, and they had a lot of chances, and, you know, part of it was still Fred VanVleet wasn't right. He had, like, two looks that I basically could have won them the game, and he didn't hit them. And I think he would have, actually, if he'd been healthy, because he was wide open. But that it just didn't happen, and, you know, there's the famous sequence where Valanciunas and I think Miles and a couple others are all like grabbing the ball under the rim and rebounding like six times, but they can't just seem to put it in the basket. That was brutal. That was a real blow, I think, to the team and to fans, and just really tough. And Cleveland, especially LeBron, kind of smelled that, and they kind of took control from there. And you know, the game three comeback, famously, obviously now with, when Casey benched DeRozan and OG and Lowry led the comeback in game three, OG hits that big three at the end of the game to tie it up. And then LeBron James comes down the floor and puts up that floater and banks it in at the buzzer and just destroys.
Yeah, that ripped out some souls.
Yeah. He just, you know, Grim Reaper style came and took all the souls of Toronto. So yeah, just a brutal way to end a spectacular season. So yeah, that's got to be the disappointment for me.
It's the same thing for me. I don't know who we picked, Nick, to win that series. I want to say we both picked LeBron. I don't think I picked against LeBron.
I don't think I picked against LeBron the entire postseason, even how bad the Cavs team was. But I think we didn't expect it to be a sweep.
And I know someone. I think we said Cavs in six or seven.
Yeah.
I actually think I would have been fine if they'd gone seven and they'd lost, like if it had been like a Boston series or a Pacers series, because I, you know, you never want to get into a game seven with an all-time great. If you get into game seven with LeBron, he just knows that he has 48 minutes and that's all he has to play to get to the next round, and he's probably going to destroy you. So, you know, I think like that I would have been okay with that, but to get swept again, it's really deflating.
And to tie into that disappointment, I'd have to say DeRozan was also slightly a disappointment in that series. Because it definitely looked like after they lost that game one that he kind of just – it just felt like he checked out. He played decent in game two. Game three and four, he just looked like a shell of himself, especially that game three. I mean, that game three, he was just god-awful. I think he had, 8 points, I think, and 13 in the final game. He just looked like he checked out. And obviously – you know, the mental hurdle part, you can take that however you want to take it. I truly believe that was the biggest issue, is that this team just kind of sees LeBron James as that big brother, and they just can't, you know, they're always going to be the little brother in that situation, especially after that game one loss. I just feel like it just further implanted that seed in their mind that they just couldn't beat this team.
It's really sad that the last moment that Raptors fans have with DeRozan in a Raps uni was him getting fouled out of game four, getting ejected. I mean, I guess not a foul though, but he was.
And his last three games in the playoffs, minus 22, minus 23, minus 29, and plus minus. not great.
Yeah. You kind of feel for DeRozan on that, but obviously the same disappointment for me. I think anytime you have such a great regular season, you go out that way, it always kind of sucks, not only for the team, but for the fans too. Moving on to this year's rankings, the Raptors are in the top five, number four in the OTG power rankings. What are your thoughts on this? Too high, too low, fair ranking?
Can I know who's in front of them?
The teams in front of them, off the top of my head, I believe is Golden State, Houston, and Boston.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I could double check it to make sure 100%. And for anybody who's listening and wants to check out the full list, right on OTG Basketball's Twitter account. But yeah, Warriors are number one, number two Celtics, number three Rockets, number four Raptors.
Yeah, I'm all right with that. I think obviously, you know, the Warriors are going to be number one, I think, for most people. Houston did not have a good summer at all, but I mean, I still think they're going to be a pretty good team. We'll see what goes on with Melo there. That'll be interesting. And then Boston, yeah, that I don't mind that either. I think right now I see Boston and Toronto as sort of 1A, 1B in the East. I could see either one finishing in the, as the top seed and either one potentially going to the finals. I think I'd say that's a fair ranking.
I think it's very fair, especially, you know, obviously the Warriors, they're clearly better because this team is a juggernaut. The Celtics being healthy and how far they went last year without being healthy, obviously you have to kind of think maybe chemistry could play some kind of factor. But I think because of just how they look on paper, the switchability possibly of that team defensively, they've got to be, like you said, 1A, 1B. The Rockets, you know, as long as James Harden is MVP level and Chris Paul is healthy, I think that team is still probably the second or third best team in the West. And then obviously the Raptors, I think this four is solid because we don't necessarily know what this team is going to look like with DeRozan and Kawhi swapping out, but you got to think they get better defensively and remain relatively the same offensively.
Yeah, I think four is fair because there is somewhat of a question mark how everything's going to fit with the Raptors to kind of put them ahead of the other teams.
And new coach.
Yeah, and a new coach, obviously, with little experience. So we'll see what happens to that. Talking about that, obviously, Dwayne Casey was out. Nick Nurse is in as the new head coach. What are your thoughts on bringing him in? Obviously, he was already there, but now he's just promoted.
Yeah, I really like it. It's not like he doesn't have any experience. He's been an assistant coach for a while, and he had a coach at the G League level and then overseas. So he's done a lot of coaching. He's had a lot of coaching experience. I think he's ready for this. I was happy that they hired a guy internally. I think it was a good hire. They went through a good process, though. You know, they had Nurse on the list of candidates, and they didn't immediately just go with him. They had him there, and then they brought in a bunch of other people and some Spurs people even. And so they went through the process, and they ultimately decided on Nurse. And I think it's a good decision. And I mean, you know, the reason the Raptors played so well offensively last season is largely attributed to him. He's the guy who created sort of new look offense for them, and apparently he'd been pushing it actually for a couple seasons, but you know, last season they finally implemented it and it worked wonders. And you know, that's a great sort of sales pitch for him to become, you know, the new head coach. It wasn't the offense that failed the Raptors in the playoffs. It was you know, the defense and matchup specifically.
What are your thoughts on Nurse, Corey?
I mean, I don't know a ton about him. I know that when I talked to Josh earlier this summer, Josh was really high on him, which made me feel confident in the Raptors' decision. I know the players seem to like him as well, and he was, I believe, on the Zach Lowe podcast I listened to earlier this summer, that he was, you know, their number one option when they were looking for a new head coach. That this was the guy they were pretty much set on promoting. So if everybody's on the same page and everybody likes Nick Nurse, then there's got to be a reason for it. And obviously, I'm not a giant fan of firing Dwayne Casey after the year he had. But I think anytime you're having stagnant, you know, they've been stagnant, they haven't been able to kind of get over that hump. So it made somewhat sense to make a move. Obviously, with LeBron leaving, I might have wanted to stay with Casey for one more year, but that's besides the point. So I'm okay with the hiring as of right now.
Josh, do you think in like hindsight, if they were able to know they were going to get Kawhi Leonard, they wouldn't have fired Casey and kept him around with Kawhi, or they still would have made the change? Obviously, it's a complete hypothetical and we'll never know, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think they probably still would have made the change, honestly, just to keep things fresh, to keep things switched up, honestly. It's really difficult because, like you guys are saying, like, obviously, well, one, it's a hypothetical, but two, like, Casey is a really good coach, and he's really good at certain things. Like, he's the coach in Toronto for quite some time, so we knew what he was good at, maybe what he wasn't so great at, the minutia stuff, the micro level stuff, you know, specifically like for example, in the playoffs, having Miles specifically intentionally switch on to Kevin Love in the post is not probably a great plan. Stuff like that, you know, adjustments, certain things like that. He just wasn't the best coach at that. There's other stuff that he's great at, like really good. He got the guys to buy in every year. I think a big part of the transition to the new modern style that they played last season with the same core, you know, seasons before that, they've been playing a lot of isolation heavy basketball. He's a big reason to why the team was able to make that transition, because he believed in the guys and the guys believed in him and they knew what they were getting from each other. And he's always been great, just a great guy in general too. Great guy with the media, very personable. So he's a great coach. A very good big picture coach. He helped establish the culture. But I think part of the reason the Raptors felt okay with firing Dwayne Casey was the idea that that culture had been established. So I think even if they knew Kawhi was coming in, maybe they would try and hire a guy who still was able to execute the minutia stuff a little bit better, because the culture was already established and, you know, he can just sort of slip into that, especially as someone who'd been part of that culture for years now. He could just slip into that and then really work the smaller stuff, you know, with a new roster, with a guy like Kawhi who can really, you know, plug some holes there that have been there before. So, yeah, I think if I had to just, you know, guess, I'd say they probably still would have switched it up.
Gotcha. That's a fair point too, is the culture was already established, kind of bring somebody in that can, you know, focus on the small details. But talking additions, no draft picks, but the big trade, obviously everyone knows, Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green to Toronto. First, we'll talk about Kawhi, obviously elite when healthy, one of the top five, you know, top four players in the NBA. How happy were you when they got Kawhi Leonard?
I was freaking out. I couldn't believe that it actually had happened. I lived in a couple of days before that. Actually, I was at my local pickup and pickup run, and there had been some guys there that were talking about the possibility of the trade, and they were all kind of like, "Ah, I don't think it's really going to happen," which was a totally fair standpoint. And I was like, "Yeah, you know, guys, I don't know, guys. There's it's really prolonged, and you know, this everything's been" sort of dragged out. And I think maybe the Raptors will find a way to kind of sneak in there. Like there's a possibility. And then basically like the next morning is when the trade happened. So I felt like I'd basically been, you know, just an amazing prognosticator, and that they were all going to be at work being like, "Oh my God, Josh was right." Even though I had no idea, but yeah, it's just, it still feels unreal. Even with media day, that's helped a little bit. Actually seeing him in like a Raptors uniform, sitting there and answering questions and doing his weird but lovely laugh.
that laugh.
Lovely is a nice word to put with it, I suppose.
I mean, I think it's like, some people who think it might be contrived, and maybe it is, but like if it's his like real laugh or whatever, like I'm totally cool with it. Some people have weird laughs and maybe he just has a weird one. And like, I don't know if that's the way he is. Like, that's cool, man. Like this is like, it's like the first time I've ever seen Kawhi laugh. Like, I think somebody put together a compilation of all the times he's actually laughed, and it's only like a minute or so long, so it's not very long.
That's a lot.
It's like the first time I've ever actually seen him do it. So I was really excited just to like Kawhi had a viral moment. Like, when was the last time you can remember Kawhi actually having a viral moment? And he just had it in a Raptors uniform. Like, I think in a weird way that might be sort of a big deal for, like, you know, just getting him to the next chapter in his career.
That's a good point. We'll see him in the Raptors jersey for a long time now, at least with that that viral video.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember because I was getting up for work at like 5 a.m. all summer. I still do, but I remember like getting up and having like way more notifications than I ever have when I wake up that early. And it was all about, you know, Kawhi being traded, because it happened. Oh, no, not Kawhi being traded. DeRozan's, like, you know, Insta story saying there's no loyalty. And I was like, oh, my God, like, there's something, like, coming. And then, obviously, Kawhi got traded for DeRozan. I mean, I know that when I heard the rumor initially for Kawhi possibly going to Toronto as, like, a dark horse, you know, I was kind of like, there's like, who are they going to trade? I was like, there's no way they're going to want to get rid of DeRozan. I was like, they just re-signed DeRozan, basically. I was like, there's no way they're going to want to deal him. and obviously they did. And I mean, I think it's great for Toronto personally. Like, DeRozan's a fantastic player. He's an all-star. But, you know, realistically, when you get down to the gist of it, he's not Kawhi Leonard. He's not a healthy Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, when healthy, is a top three player. People kind of forget that just 2 years ago, we were almost considering him the best player in the game. You know, he was right there with Durant and LeBron. He was one of the best two-way players. He's already got finals MVP and an NBA champion underneath his belt. I mean, this is a big-time player. So I thought for Toronto it was the right move, especially for them being kind of stagnant. So I was actually really happy that Toronto was able to kind of make a move like that, because you don't normally see Toronto kind of make those blockbuster moves.
Yeah, I thought it was a good move, and it kind of puts them in a position where I know some people were like, oh, maybe they should blow this team up. Well, now they take their last full swing. They'd go up for Kawhi. If he resigns, then they're set up for the future. If he doesn't, then they're able to kind of blow it up afterwards. What are your thoughts on what we'll see from Kawhi this season in terms of just statistics and just overall health? Do you expect him to play a full season? What do you kind of expect to see from him on the floor?
Yeah, in terms of like healthiness, I think he is healthy. He did play 5-on-5 for the first time in training camp. For the first time in a while, I guess, in training camp recently. And he said he felt good. Everyone's been saying he's been really looking good. And in the offseason, people were saying that his workouts were really, really something to behold. So, yeah, I'm optimistic that he's going to be healthy. There might be some rust because he just hasn't played since, you know, like last January. And it was like 9 games and he, you know, didn't look 100% healthy then. So he might have some rust and stuff like that. But if he's healthy, I think he's going to be really great. I'm just looking forward to actually seeing him out there, what he can do. I mean, it's wild to think about, because he's a player who can actually do everything pretty much on the floor. The Raptors fans have never really had a player like that. Like every one of their best players seems to have a very specific flaw. DeRozan's was his defense. He's a really good offensive player, and even there he had some things he needed to tweak and switch up, but mostly his defense, whereas Kawhi doesn't really have those flaws. I mean, maybe a Spurs fan who knows him better than I do could tell me, but his game is pretty overall incredible, and that's why he's a top five player. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to him suiting up for the team. What was the second half of that question? Now I'm forgetting.
Just what you expect him on the court. You pretty much covered it all.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Corey, what are your thoughts on him?
I mean, I'm expecting Kawhi Leonard to be Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
I'm expecting him in this Toronto's defense to, you know, what did I say? They were fifth or fourth last year, probably to be, you know, second or third. I think there's another gear for this team to take, especially defensively. And I'm expecting Kawhi to be, you know, put his name in the conversation and once again be one of the best players in this league. And he's got an entire country that he can basically run now. I think Toronto, I know a lot of people are skeptical if he's going to end up re-signing and stuff, but I think once he gets in there and once he starts playing at a high level, I mean, he can be the face of a country, which not many NBA players can do. So I'm looking forward to Kawhi really just being Kawhi again.
Yeah, and obviously he's a free agent at the end of the year, so he's going to kind of ball out and try to get that big contract. And I think some teams want to make sure he's 100% healthy, you know, if he were not to stay in Toronto. But talking about the other guy in the trade, Danny Green, a lot of people forgot about him, you know, kind of mentioned him as a throw-in. But I think Danny Green still has some juice in the tank. What are your thoughts on adding Green?
I think Danny Green's actually a really good fit for the team. There's some things that I think, we'll have to see if training camp really – they really get into it, whether or not they get into it or not. But the transition from the Spurs to the Raptors is going to be interesting, because the Spurs, just because of their personnel from the past couple seasons, they've really been focused on taking, you know, two-pointers, and they take a lot of mid-range shots. You know, obviously Marcus Aldridge is that's one of his go-to shots, so they've taken a lot of that kind of stuff. So their system has been sort of set up around, you know, getting guys these looks, because these are the looks they're good at. Whereas, you know, Danny Green is basically the quintessential 3-and-D guy. But, you know, while he was in San Antonio, he's also taking a lot of like mid-range looks and going at the basket, which isn't necessarily his strongest ability. So, you know, if the Raptors, which I know they've done at least last season and a couple before that, they sort of have looked to wean out certain shots that they don't think will be useful in for the actual season. So like I know last season they basically eliminated all mid-range shots except for DeRozan. They obviously let DeRozan do that because it's one of his specialties, but everybody else had to shoot three-pointers. They even had spots set up that were they just labeled were worth 4 points. And then everything else was right at the basket. So if they can sort of get green and stop maybe taking some of those certain kinds of mid-range looks, which I think will be like pretty easy because the system is set up to get him and everyone else those three-point looks where it wasn't necessarily in San Antonio, I think he's actually going to slide in pretty easily because he's basically a lot like CJ Miles, but a better defender. So he also said he's feeling good. He had that groin injury at the end of last season, but he seems to think he's near back 100%. So, yeah, I'm expecting him actually to come in and play play some good minutes, maybe be in the starting lineup. We'll see. But whatever he does, I think he's going to be able to slip in and add that veteran experience that we know he has.
I am a big fan of Danny Green being attached to this deal. I think he's perfect for what Toronto is trying to do. He's a 3-and-D guy. Obviously, he's a little bit up there in age, and I'm slightly concerned that he played the entire season with a torn groin, but obviously it came out that he knew it was bad and he chose to play through it. It just shows how tough he is because I can't even imagine trying to play through that.
Sounds uncomfortable as hell.
Yeah, and still, and not even just that, but he was still a very effective player last year. I think his offensive numbers may have dipped, but he was still known as one of the better perimeter guards in the league. So if he's healthy, I like him. I just really like the fact that this Toronto team, which has not had the greatest three-point shooters in recent years, they've definitely have gone in the direction with the rest of the NBA, and they've added those three-point shooters. So now you got Green, you got CJ Miles, Lowry, you have Ibaka who can shoot threes, Kawhi Leonard can shoot threes decently, Fred VanVleet was decent last year shooting threes. So now this team has a lot of decent three-point shooters, a lot of guys who can play defense. I think it was a very nice additional piece with this Kawhi trade.
Yeah, definitely more than a throw-in, in my opinion. I'd like to see what he can do and how he can fit with this team and kind of just add some more defense and just another solid veteran to have with a lot of playoff experience too. But talking free agent signings, nothing huge. Greg Monroe, 1 year veteran minimum, you know, solid big off the bench. What are your thoughts about adding Monroe?
Okay, so first of all, how perfect is it that the Raptors signed a guy whose nickname is Moose?
It is. It's fitting.
Yeah, pretty great. I'm just going to be talking about that all season. it's an interesting signing. I was skeptical that the Raptors were actually going to be able to get him at the minimum because I knew the market was not great for bigs this summer, but I didn't realize it would be that tough for Monroe. Maybe he really was just that interested in getting on a winning team. But yeah, I was a little surprised that the Raptors were able to snag him at the minimum. And again, for that price, you know, he was the best player available out there. What they really needed, obviously, if you're looking at this roster right now, as it's currently constructed, their biggest issue is in the front court, just depth wise. They obviously lost Bebe, Lucas Nogueira, who was a great third string center for them. So now they're, and obviously Pirtle in the trade. So now they're, you know, they got JV, still their starting center. And then after that, you know, it gets a little dicey, and that's why a lot of people are, you know, were thinking about, well, switch it up and put Ibaka in the backup center spot, and, you know, then you can have him there. And some people are proponent of Siakam playing center, which I am not one of those people. Don't play him center a lot of minutes. It won't go well. But so now they have Greg Monroe, and it's interesting because he's not necessarily a particularly great style fit in terms of how he plays the game. He's not a, you know, a quick-footed guy. He's sort of a plodding center. He's got the low post game. He doesn't stretch the floor at all outside of, you know, like 0 to 3 feet kind of thing. But he rebounds really well, and he's a really good passer. And those two things are important, especially the rebounding when you don't have a lot of depth at that position. So it's interesting. My initial reaction to this was basically, I think he should be a break glass in case of emergency guy. Run the lineups where you have Ibaka at the backup center a lot more. And, you know, if you have some nights where Ibaka needs to take them off to rest, plug in Monroe. It's a good way to keep him in shape. If there's an injury, you have him there as insurance. But during training camp, when people have talked to Monroe about it, he seems to have said that he's planning on playing with the bench unit, like starting with the bench as the center. So if that is the case, then we'll be probably seeing him more than I would have expected. But so we're going to have to see how Nurse utilizes him, because I think one of the strongest attributes of the bench mob is to get out and run. And they talked about planning on doing that a lot more this season than creating turnovers and stuff like that. And just, again, stylistically, it's going to be tougher for Monroe to really to do that. We also know that he's not a great rim protector or defender in general. So they'll have to maybe, you know, be creative in terms of their defensive schemes with the bench unit, if that's the case. Maybe some trapping and stuff like that, some more aggressive defense. But yeah, I think overall, he's a really interesting addition. He's definitely, you know, not a bad player to have as a backup. Again, they got him at the minimum, so you can't really complain. I'm glad Moose is on the team. We'll see what he can bring.
Is there an echo?
Yeah, there's a slight echo. I think it may be coming. Do you still hear it, Corey, or no?
Yeah.
Josh, I think it's coming from your end.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to grab headphones?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's weird. It just popped up. But yeah, just grab headphones real quick if you can.
Yeah, okay. Give me 2 seconds.
Yeah, no problem.
That's weird.
That's so random. But it's not not the first time I've had it happen. Like, it just like randomly in the middle of the...
Yeah, like, 35 minutes in, we just all of a sudden have an echo.
Mm.
All right. It stunned me, though. I was a little caught off. I was like, wait a minute.
Well, the weird thing is it's not there right now.
Yeah.
And it's not like he shut off his laptop or anything or whatever. So, interesting.
Hello?
Yeah, nothing now. Josh, you there?
Yeah, is it gone?
Yeah, it's gone. That's super strange, but
very strange. All
right. Technology. But Corey, what are your thoughts on Monroe?
I mean, I like Monroe from an offensive standpoint. Obviously, he can still score in the low post. He's a decent passer, a very good rebounder. I'm a little surprised that they went after another center, kind of similar to Valanciunas, that doesn't give you a ton of rim protection, is kind of slow on their feet when it comes to defense. I don't know. I think it's slightly strange. But, you know, coming off that the bench with the second unit, I still wouldn't play him more than, you know, 20 minutes a game, maybe just for some spot-up offense. But I think it's a solid addition. Obviously, for what they got him at, it was cheap. And why not take a risk on a guy who has shown that he can score and rebound?
Yeah. Like Josh was saying, really at that price, there's no reason not to get him. Just kind of add to the bench. And if you need to use him, you use him. Josh, any of the other guys they signed, I know it's more of like training camp deals and whatnot. Any of those guys you expect to kind of stand out or anything and make the team?
I'm not really sure if any of them. Greg Monroe fills the 14th spot. And I think then you kind of assume that, you only need 14, but like maybe if someone's going to be on there, it'll be another big, like Chris Boucher is still kicking around. He's obviously at training camp. He's going to try and fight for maybe at least a two-way contract. So we'll see. The Raptors signed like 8,000 point guards. so that's kind of interesting. Like Lorenzo Brown is on a deal, a one-year deal, G League MVP. He was on a two-way last year. And then they went and they signed, like Kay Felder. I think they only are able to offer one more two-way contract right now. Jordan Lloyd has already got one for sure. So, I think there's a bunch of those guys going around. I know Eric Moreland. Is it Moreland?
Yep, that is. Yeah. Yep. He played with the Kings. I think he was on Detroit last year. I know he's had some like decent moments in the NBA.
Yeah, he just got invited to camp. So that could be interesting. He's another big. But I think if you're looking between him and a guy like Boucher, I think you're probably going to go with the latter just because he's got a lot more upside in general. But Moreland is a really good defensive player too. It's on the other end that he has some issues. But some of those guys, their names are interesting and they kind of stick out. But I think for the most part, you know, this is sort of the group you really need to get acquainted with. And then everybody else that comes up, they'll probably be on two ways.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes teams like to keep that open spot, you know, in case somebody's bought out and they just want to have the extra free agent. But talking departures, you know, obviously DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, Lucas Nogueira, Malcolm Miller, Alfonso McKinney. Any of these guys, you know, who are they really going to miss? Obviously, they're going to miss DeMar, but they swapped them for Kawhi, so it's kind of a more than a wash. But any of the other guys you wish they had kept?
I'm sad to see Malcolm Miller go. I know it's not really like a big deal, but I really like Malcolm Miller. I think he's got a lot of potential. He's going to be playing, I think it's China, the Ezhan League? Ezhan League?
Interesting.
Yeah, he's playing with the Formosa Dreamers. I know that. So, he's going to be playing there. But, you know, I think he has a good skill set. He has a lot of the tools to be a really solid, you know, kind of backup guy. So I like him. He was good player for, you know, the 905. And he came up and obviously, like I said, he had some games where he played really well for the Raptors, like when he came up to play in that Houston game. Yeah, so I'm going to miss him. I wish him the best. Hopefully he finds his way back to the NBA. I cannot believe that Lucas Nogueira could not find another NBA team. It's sort of shocking to me. He's really good. It's so weird. Like, I guess a lot of people just don't really know about his game and don't really know about him in general, maybe. But he's a really good player. He was a third string center on the Raptors, but man, he's sort of a spark plug player. I mean, if he's your backup center, like, that's not bad. He's a really good defensive guy. Like, his rim protection is fantastic. Like, if that's something you need, and a lot of teams do, and just having him as a backup, I mean, he's really good at that. So I was kind of shocked that no NBA team was willing to give him a chance. So he's going to be in Spain this season. But, yeah, he was a spark plug type player for the Raptors. He actually played pretty well with any Kyle Lowry unit. He changed game one against the Wizards in this past playoffs. Like, the Raptors were kind of shaky, and then Nogueira came in and actually changed the whole momentum of that game, and the Raptors ended up winning. Yeah, he's a really good guy. So, also, you know, just he's a really fun guy too. Has one of the best smiles. Great locker room presence. Yeah, love that dude. Gonna miss him. But yeah, and then of course Bruno. You know, I think he's right now. So he's with the Rockets. I am very doubtful he's going to actually make the team with Houston, but he's over there. And yeah, man, I mean, every Raptors fan basically has an irrational love for Bruno Caboclo.
Every team needs one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like basically embedded in Raptors lore at this point as just like a folk hero for some reason. And he did help bring the 905 their first title. So that's a pretty big deal. But yeah, going to miss all those guys. They were great to have around the organization.
What about you, Corey? Any departures stick out for you other than DeMar?
No, I didn't follow this bench unit as closely as Josh did. So I see a lot of these guys as being replaceable. And I do know a lot of people for Toronto fans in general love Bruno. And like the few times I saw him, like, I just don't understand why. But we all have those guys. For me, it was Lance, and he's not very good either. So.
Go ahead, Josh.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, like, quickly before someone massacres me when they hear this. obviously, Poeltl is gonna be missed as well. When he went with DeRozan, you know, he's gonna be in San Antonio. Everybody in San Antonio will love him. He's a European big who knows where to play. He's always in the right spots on the floor. He's a good defensive player. He's really mobile. Really nice guy. Obviously, it was sad to split up him and Siakam. But he was really great. He was a big part of the Raptors bench unit and how the bench mob worked so well. He has some really good instincts in general. He's very good at not only, just acting as the role guy, but also setting picks and setting screens and stuff like that. The little things that maybe don't get noticed as much, he's really good at that stuff. So he's obviously going to be missed as well. Him and DeMar, I think it's obvious that, you know, both of those guys were really integral to this team. So replacing Poeltl actually might be a little bit more difficult because obviously, like, you know, Kawhi and Green can help on the wings, which was the position that DeRozan played. But the front court, the place where Poeltl helped pick up some slack, that may be a bit tougher. So we might notice, the missing presence of Poeltl maybe more than even DeRozan. So, yeah, he's going to be missed too.
That makes sense. And I like Poeltl. I like this feel for the game. Like you said, the high basketball IQ, doing the small things. But talking starters for opening night, who you got on opening night?
So I'm going to keep my prediction the same. I've had the same prediction pretty much all summer. I think Lowry's going to start, obviously. And then one of OG or Green. And then Kawhi and Ibaka and Valanciunas. The other popular lineup, probably the better lineup in terms of just like, you know, how high the ceiling is with it, is Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi, OG at the four, and then Valanciunas. Smaller ball lineup, quicker lineup, more switchability, stuff like that. But like I mentioned earlier, Greg Monroe seemed to say that he thinks he's going to be starting with the bench unit. So that leads me to believe that Ibaka is going to be starting, at least for the time being. But I mean, this team, and Nurse has talked about it already, like they're going to be, it's going to be really fluid the whole year. It's a year for experimentation with a bunch of lineups. There's just like a crazy amount of wings on this team. So you can try a whole bunch of different things. And I think, you know, Nurse is a very creative guy. So I think there is going to be a lot of that. And it's going to be interesting. Like there's going to be stuff switching around all the time. So it's not like this starting lineup is going to be set in stone. Like last season, you pretty much had, you know, the starting unit, and then you had the bench mob, and then you had a couple transitional lineups, like, you know, Lowry with the bench unit and a couple other ones. But those were pretty much the only lineups, and the Raptors played a ton of those minutes in the same lineups, more than most other teams. So I think this season is going to be a change from that. You're actually going to see a lot more different kinds of lineups. So I expect that to be just the way it starts, but I expect it also to change very quickly, and for a Nurse to try out a bunch of stuff to try and get the team not only just to see what works, but also to prepare them for the playoffs. Maybe when, you know, when he decides, oh, we have to try this, and you don't want it to be the first time that you're trying it. So I think he's going to try a lot of different things.
Yeah, this starting lineup is kind of hard to gauge because I don't know what direction they really want to go in. So like, I think Kyle Lowry, Kawhi, and Valanciunas are locks. And then I want to say Danny Green starts at the two, and they start OG at the four as a small ball lineup. But I could also see them, like you mentioned, Ibaka starting at that four, and maybe Kawhi plays like a taller two with OG at the three, and then 5 minutes in, we see Danny Green come off the bench. But I think if I had a lock in a starting five, I would go with Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, OG at the small ball four, and Valanciunas at the five.
Yeah, I could see them playing that lineup a lot, but I kind of think that they'll start with something more traditional where they'll start Ibaka. I see Lowry. I think they're going to go with OG because I think you want to get Danny Green's minutes down a little bit and you want to keep confidence in OG. And then you'll have Kawhi or Swap and whatever. They're both playing on the wing. And then Ibaka and then Valanciunas. And then kind of like what Corey said, though, you kind of sub Ibaka out early and they kind of get to that Danny Green lineup where they go a little bit smaller, which I feel like every year now moving forward, we're going to keep seeing teams go smaller and more positionless. So that lineup kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, I think they also need to reduce Ibaka's minutes overall.
Yeah.
So, like, I think they're going to start. Like I said, I think he probably will start. But, like, I do think fairly quickly into the season, it's going to become pretty obvious that Ibaka can't be playing big minutes. So I think that's also going to factor into just how quickly the rotation decides to switch up to maybe something smaller and that utilizes just the crazy amount of wings the Raptors have.
Now, talking breakout starter and starting lineup, who's going to have a breakout season?
The starting lineup is kind of tough because I guess we're not entirely sure who's going to start in some spots. Like, I guess I could pick OG, although I'm not really sure how much of a breakout season he could have with this team. Because I think his role is still going to be pretty much limited to what it was last season because he doesn't need to do more to help this team be really successful. Maybe if he just shoots the ball a bit better, you know, and finishes a bit better in transition and stuff like that, it could be considered more of a breakout year. Typically, to have it be a breakout year, it's got to be guy's got to have the ball in his hands a lot more. So I'm going to say Valanciunas has a breakout season. Although it might be difficult to be able to tell because I'm not sure his actual like stat sheet numbers are going to rocket through the roof or anything. But he has a good relationship with Nick Nurse, and Nurse has talked about a lot how he wants to utilize Valanciunas more. They've talked about his passing a lot being something to keep an eye on. This is going to be the most spacing Valanciunas has ever had to work with too. He's a really great one-on-one post player as well, but he's kind of an underrated passer. He just hasn't gotten to use it a lot more. And last season he was able to use it more than in seasons past. Like even just with handoffs, like he was doing dribble handoffs and not just, you know, standing in position and handing the ball off, stuff like that, like little things. I think that could really lead him to having even more confidence. It was the best season he ever had last year. And, you know, he developed a chemistry quick with the other guys that he maybe necessarily not had before. Like even DeRozan, who he'd played with for years, when DeRozan was, you know, asked to play make more, and he did, Valanciunas is kind of on the receiving end of a lot of that stuff. And, you know, he sort of was ready to go more and in when he was in those positions. So I expect him to be in a lot more of those positions now this season, and just maybe to have the ball in his hands a little bit more and see how much Nurse actually trusts him to initiate some plays. And that could be really useful, having a lot of other guys like Kyle and Leonard and Green or OG, whoever it is, running around off ball and setting screens for one another and getting open looks that way. I think that could be a really big deal.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it feels like at times, you know, Casey didn't necessarily use Valanciunas as much as Raptor fans and writers wanted him to. But, Corey, what about your breakout starter?
I'm going with the easy one. I'm saying Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, he's already a top five player, as we kind of mentioned. He's last year, obviously, he only played 9 games. The year before, he averaged 25 and, you know, what, 5-3. But he's always been in that Popovich system. The kind of system where even when you're the best player, you may not necessarily be showcased as the best player because, you know, he doesn't allow players to really kind of take over a team. I kind of feel like with this Toronto team, although I think he'll still play within whatever system Nick Nurse decides to run, I just think we're going to see more of Kawhi as a vocal point of an offense. Obviously, he's worked out with Kobe a lot in the past, and he's got a tremendous game to him. And I just think there's another step for him to take. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's healthy and he averages like 28 points per game, which is, you know, obviously a huge jump from last season. But I think for him, there's more to his game that we can see.
Yeah, I agree with Kawhi breaking out in the sense that he's going to remind people who he is, because I think a lot of people, like we mentioned earlier, are kind of sleeping on him because he was injured last year. I think he'll get back to that, you know, top three, top five player, be in the MVP race and really have a chance to kind of make some noise and build up even more excitement for free agency. But breakout bench player.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the obvious one here. I think it's Siakam.
Yep.
Everybody's talking about him this summer. He's like the guy, if you want to talk about the Raptors and off-season workout videos. He's the dude that just everybody's like, wow, you got to see this guy. His off-season workouts have been great. The runs he's been in have been fantastic. He's improved in every facet of his game. His ball handling's better. He's dribbling up the floor and pulling up for threes in transition.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all stuff that, you know, people are talking about him doing. And obviously, like, even at training camp a couple of days ago, DeLon Wright was talking about it. And they were doing those runs at UCLA with a bunch of other NBA players. And he's like, oh, yeah, Siakam's doing all this stuff. I don't know if he's going to do it in a game. Pause. You know, but he's looking really good. So, yeah, obviously, I don't think you're going to see Siakam just walking up the floor and pull up and do a three. But if he is able to, you know, use that stuff to just become a better 3-point shooter in general, I mean, that's great, right? Like that's the kind of stuff that's all you can really ask from him. If the stuff about his ball handling and playmaking is true, I think that could be one of the most important things, because even if his 3-point shot doesn't necessarily come along, like last season, he was a 22% 3-point shooter. So he's not a good 3-point shooter. If he was at league average, that would be massive for the bench unit and the team as a whole. But even if it's just his playmaking and Ball handling is improved. You know, you can use him as the primary initiator, playmaker with the bench unit. And in that case, that gives that whole squad more spacing and just, you know, more options. You could have Fred VanVleet running around off the ball. He's a great off-ball player. You know, DeLon Wright, same thing. Like, these guys all know how to play off the ball as well. So if you had Siakam running around, you don't have to worry about him being left wide open in the corner because he's the guy up there who's initiating a pick and roll, or, you know, he's just slicing into the lane and he can find a guy, you know, out in the corner who's, you know, not him. If he has Fred VanVleet in the corner and, you know, he's managing to sneak into the lane off the pick and roll with whoever it is, whether it be Monroe or Ibaka or somebody, and he can make that pass, all of a sudden that changes a lot of things for that group. You know, and obviously as a pretty big guy, you know, that's a big deal. He's sort of like a Swiss Army knife, just in the fact that he could already do a little bit of everything. So if he's refining a lot of those skills, that could just be huge. So yeah, I'm going to go with Siakam. Everything I've heard about him has just been kind of crazy.
All right, let's see if I say this right. Siakam.
There you go, Corey. Josh, you don't know, but Corey struggles with pronunciation on international names.
Yeah, if you're from, it's bad. There's a podcast coming where I'm going to butcher probably 100 names.
How are you with Luka Doncic?
Luka Doncic.
He's not bad with the big names. It's more so, you know.
Like Antetokounmpo is like really easy. Like that one shouldn't be easy, but like that one just rolls. It's like the smaller one, like Milos Teletishik. No, like, see, that's bad. But for me, it's Siakam as well. I saw the same thing. I've seen a lot of the same sound bites, him dribbling up the court, him being more of a pull-up three shooter. I know he was on the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast earlier this summer too. And, you know, him just talking, I actually became a decent fan of his just from that one podcast. Yeah. And even though he was with a bunch of goofballs, but I'm looking forward to seeing if he can take his game to another level like that. If he's that kind of offensive threat coming off the bench, mm-hmm. That's huge. Obviously with Jakob Poeltl being, I did good on that name too. Yeah. With him being gone, Siakam has a huge opportunity to gain minutes. And, you know, I wouldn't rule out him kind of pushing maybe Greg Monroe out of the rotation. If Greg Monroe can't play any defense, Siakam is being this offensive threat and playing solid defense, then Greg Monroe might find himself kind of in a similar situation he was in last year with, like, the Suns, the Bucks, and the Celtics, where he just really couldn't find missiles unless somebody was hurt.
Yeah, it's a hat trick for Siakam. You know, same thing here. I just really like all the things that Josh and Corey said in terms of improving this summer, but I just like his overall fit in the modern NBA with the skill set and the athleticism that he does have. But talking wins and best case scenario for the season for the Raptors.
Yeah, best case scenario, I'm going to say the Raptors win like 64-ish games. Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to say they finish first in the East. And everything sort of hums, and Nurse gets comfortable. The players build chemistry. The new guys integrate well. Kawhi Leonard's 100% healthy. Same thing with Danny Green. All that transition stuff goes smoothly. They make the Eastern Conference Finals. They beat Boston. They get to the finals where they're going to lose to the Warriors. But that's fine because that's sort of the goal. That was the goal of last season, was just make the finals. If they're able to do that this season, I think that's a huge deal. I also think it would play a big part in getting Kawhi Leonard to re-sign. So I'm going to say that's sort of the overall best case scenario.
Yeah, my best case scenario is over 60 wins, not as high as you, but 62 wins. This team becomes probably the best defensive team possibly in the East. They finally get over that hump when it comes to the playoffs. They battle it out with the Celtics and the Sixers, and then they make it to the finals, and they don't get swept in the finals. Maybe they win a game, they lose like 4-1, or maybe they even take two games because of their defensive ability, and they kind of have some decent pieces to maybe match up a little bit. But, I mean, that Warriors team is sick nasty, and no one expects anyone to beat that team, obviously. So for me, it'd be 62 wins, obviously a one seed. And then they kind of just sweep through the playoffs. They finally get a NBA Finals appearance.
Yeah, 61 wins for me, similar to you guys. I think they could come out of the East. I think they can beat Boston in a seven-game series if things go right. And obviously the transition with Kawhi coming in, the whole Lowry situation, everybody stays healthy, the bench unit, Siakam take that jump. So I think it's a real possibility. And they have, like Corey said, a really dominant season defensively, especially with all the perimeter defense they do have. Now, worst-case scenario.
Worst-case scenario I think is a very unlikely scenario, but I think it would involve – you know, Kawhi not being the same Kawhi as he was before the injury. He's just really hampered. He's not the same player. I think Lowry getting upset, so upset that he wants out, that could be obviously be part of the worst case. So that the Raptors are basically forced into making some kind of trade, some kind of deal before the deadline, before they really sort of, you know, are able to get things rolling. I think that would be the worst case scenario. Just things falling apart before they even have a chance to get started. I think that would really be the only scenario where everything just goes to crap.
Yeah, my worst case scenario isn't really a worst case scenario because I don't see this team like dropping a ton, but it'd be them getting like 50 wins, being somewhere between that 4 and 6, probably 3 and 5 range in the East. They're not bad by any means. They're still a very competitive team out East, but they just don't have that same type of success last season. Maybe, you know, Kawhi Leonard isn't 100%. Maybe these pieces don't gel necessarily as well. There is like that weird fact that Lowry has skipped the media after the last two training days for whatever reason. I'm not sure if there's anything behind that, but maybe that develops into a bigger storyline.
I was just going to say, I do want to be clear on that, that like, obviously I think none of that's going to happen. That like Lowry and or that Kawhi's not going to be healthy, and that Kawhi or that Lowry would want out and all that stuff. And I do think like even there's been a lot of focus on Lowry the last couple of days, but you know, even in seasons past, like DeRozan has been the guy who's handled a lot of the media stuff. Like it's always been that way with Kyle and DeMar. So you know, like Lowry would say, "I'm not really into talking to the media today," and DeRozan would say, "That's cool, man. I'll handle it." And, you know, that's part of the way they worked. And DeRozan's gone now. So Lowry doesn't have that. And, I think that's part of the reason it seems like Lowry's been more volatile just with the media and stuff, like the skipping the thing today. But, you know, he says he's going to talk to the media tomorrow. So I really don't think it's actually that big of a deal. I think it's just all part of this transition. But yeah, there is being a big deal kind of made about this. I actually don't think it's really that big a deal. It's sort of just the way Lowry is. He's a surly guy. But yeah, I honestly think everything's going to be fine there.
Yeah, I think similar back to the worst case scenario, you know, kind of what you guys said, you know, maybe Kawhi's not 100%, you know, they don't gel properly and something doesn't work out. You know, I still think they'd make the playoffs, but like Corey said, around that 50 wins, maybe not a top 2 seed, but somewhere underneath that. But, you know, that's worst case. Actual prediction for the season.
Yeah, so my actual prediction will be the Raptors they win 60 games right on. Kawhi looks like Kawhi. The team figures out, you know, which lineups work best before the playoffs. They try everything out. All the guys kind of get some run. Kawhi hopefully plays most of the season. I think, you know, usually he plays around 60-something games for his career. So I'm not really expecting him to actually play the full season. Be nice if he did, but I'm not expecting it. So I think that's how many kind of games you expect out of him. But other than that, I think – you know, things just run smoothly that way. And then they meet Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. And honestly, right now, before I've seen any basketball being played, I it's sort of a toss-up for me.
So as I've been doing for the last, I think I've been doing since like the top 13, I've been going like off the Vegas over-under for wins. Vegas has Toronto at 54.5 wins. I'm going over 54.5 wins. I feel like that's really low. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going again with 59 wins. They can probably win 60, but I think they're going to get 59 wins. I think they're going to be a 2 seed in the East. They're going to be very competitive. They'll be contending for that finals, for a spot in the finals. But I just think I got to see a little bit more. I got to see what Kawhi looks like for me to really go all in on this Toronto team.
Yeah, 58 wins for me. You know, I think at first maybe they'll need a little time to gel. And like Josh said, you know, Kawhi's not going to probably play 82 games. And I think playoff-wise, they'll get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They'll have a shot, but I think Boston just has a little bit more talent and a little bit deeper. But we could see what happens, who's injured at that time and whatnot. But on to the most important question of the show. What emoji represents the Raptors for you?
So I had to actually like open up my phone and go through all the emojis.
I'm telling you, this is the toughest question you got all day.
It's a really hard question. Also because I'm not a big emoji user. I don't know if that's weird in today's day and age. I'm also not a big texter, so maybe that's why. But there is a T-Rex emoji. So that's the one I went with initially because I mean that's the most obvious. It's a dinosaur. I don't think there was a Velociraptor one, but there is a T-Rex one. So I went with that one. And if I also had to pick one that was like, I thought maybe that'd be way too obvious. So if I had to pick one that's like, you know, one of the faces with an actual expression on it, I picked that emoji that's like, its eyes are pointing at the ceiling, like it's basically rolling its eyes. Because I think people are going to be talking about Kawhi leaving all year, and that's going to be a big part of the conversation. And I think maybe it's just going to lead to ignoring the performance of the actual team and a lot of that kind of stuff. So I think some of those narratives are maybe going to just like wash over the team for the majority of the season for a lot of non-Raptors fans and people who aren't paying close attention. So I think that could be a little bit exhausting because we've already started it even now and there hasn't even been a single bit of basketball actually played yet. So yeah, those are my emojis.
This was a tough team to have an emoji for. For me, it's going to be the emoji with the guy who's covering his mouth. And for me, I think it's going to be a team that kind of just does the work. Like, I don't see anyone with a big personality on this team. I feel like this is a team that just a lot of guys who are just going to go right to work. As you mentioned, Larry doesn't really like talking to the media. We sure as hell know Kawhi doesn't. So I feel like this team is going to be one of those teams that you don't really get a lot of media sound bites from. They're really just going to go out there every day. They're going to play hard. They're going to play both sides of the ball, and they're going to be one of the best teams in the East and probably in the league as we have them fourth in our rankings.
Top five team, yeah. And for me, I'm going to go with something relevant. And when I recently think of the Raptors, I think of that Kawhi laugh. So I'm going with the laugh emoji, the laughing emoji for Kawhi. Pretty easy right there. But league pass wise, where do they sit 1 through 10?
Yeah, Kawhi's a fun guy, guys. I don't know if you knew this. Yeah, he's fun.
That was really fun.
Yeah. That's definitely how you start a press conference if you're a fun guy, too.
It was out of all the first lines I could have imagined him saying, I'm a fun guy. It's like, I don't know where that was, but nowhere near the top, like 100,000. In terms of League Pass, I'm obviously biased here, but I've thought about this. Because I almost never go the full mile in anything, but I'm going to go 10. I'm going to say it's a 10. Why? Because they're clearly one of the three really good teams in the East. Like, the Eastern Conference is not great, guys. The bottom of the East is going to be, it's not going to be fun. It's going to be kind of tough to watch some of those teams.
Excited to watch the Hawks? No, just kidding.
Well, you know, if Trae Young is maybe going hot, and you know, then they'll only lose by 30. Yeah, I mean, so the Raptors have an MVP caliber player, and we basically haven't seen him play basketball for like a year. So that's fun. That's enticing. They won 59 games last season, and they were super fun while they were doing that. Obviously, the bench mob is awesome to watch. You know, the plan this season defensively is to try and get out and run even more than before, create more turnovers, play a more up-tempo style of game than they were before. So, you know, that only makes the aesthetics more pleasing. Should be great, should be fun. They're going to be dynamos on the perimeter defense. So, you know, there should be a lot of turnovers. You know, we might get more K-Low games this season because I think Lowry might find it easier than he ever has before. With Kawhi on the team just because of the attention that Kawhi is going to draw. And, I mean, DeRozan obviously drew attention as well. But, I mean, it's Kawhi Leonard. He's going to draw even more than DeRozan did. And I think it's going to open things up for Lowry maybe in a way he's never been able to, you know, just he's going to get shots that are easier than he ever has before. I mean, and he's one of the best shooters in the league. just straight up, he's a fantastic shooter. So I think maybe we'll see more of those K-Lo games where he just shows up and, you know, plays his butt off and is amazing for a full 48 minutes. It could be great. Yeah, so I honestly think there's a lot of – obviously, and, you know, we just talked about Siakam and all that stuff. So, like, there's a lot of things with this team that I think are going to be really interesting to watch. And, you know, if you're depending on where you are, if you're sitting down and you're like, oh, it's time for an Eastern Conference game, I mean – you know, and you have Boston and Philly and Toronto. Those are really the teams that you're looking at, unless you're a specific fan of one of the other teams. You know, pretty safe bet you flip on Toronto and say, hey, how's Kawhi Leonard doing?
Yeah, for me, I'm going with an 8.5. I think this is going to be still a very fun team to watch. Obviously, when you add a guy like Kawhi Leonard, you're going to want to see him in that Raptors jersey. I'm interested to see how him and the Kyle Lowry duo look. And obviously, there's still the rumors out there that they're possibly going to try and get Jimmy Butler. I don't know how that would work. I'm not necessarily sure what the deal would look like, but that is still a rumor out there possibly. And that would make this probably a 9.5 or a 10 for me if they somehow got Jimmy Butler. But if it's an 8.5, it's going to be a competitive team. They're going to be one of the best teams in the East. For me, a lock to be a home court team. And, you know, we're going to have to see what they look like when Kawhi finally gets out there. But I think this is going to be a really fun team to watch overall.
Yeah, I think at 8.5 as well. I think also the storyline of Kawhi Leonard makes him so attractive just because you want to see what he does on the court. And obviously all that drama last season. Then there's the intrigue. Is he going to stay in Toronto? And you're going to read into his body language and his reactions so much, even though he's such like a stoic guy. But what TV show would you watch over the Raptors? Obviously, Josh, you're a Raptors fan, so this is more of a hypothetical gun to your head. What do you got?
I don't think I'd watch any TV show over the Raptors, which I think is the obvious answer coming from a Raptors fan. But also, I'm just not a big TV guy. I don't watch a lot of TV shows. And when I do watch them, it's like stuff on Netflix or somewhere I can stream them so I can like save it for later. I'm a huge film guy. I watch a lot of movies.
So you get one movie, and or maybe a movie that didn't even come out yet.
There's one movie I'd watch over the Raptors. Man, I don't know. It would probably have to be something like maybe the next main episode of the Star Wars series or the next big blockbuster, like next big Avengers movie. Maybe one of those.
That's fair. Definitely, yeah, the Avengers movie's got some major hype to it.
Yeah, I mean, like, is Spider-Man dead, guys? Like, we'll never know for sure. Like, it seems like he's dead, but, like, he also has another movie coming. So yeah. How can I know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it would have to be one of those things because I'm honestly a big lover of, like, the Oscar-type movies as well, but those are movies you can watch
later on
and on your own, and you don't necessarily need to be in a big screen. Yeah, stuff like Avengers and things like that, those are kind of event movies that you need to go to with a good crowd and,
before, you know, they get blown up on Twitter, and then you already know what happens, which happens like, yeah, within exactly, 48 yeah. hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Before I have to go on and mute every single name of every Avenger, so that I don't see any of that stuff. Yeah. So I guess it would have to be something like that. And then maybe if it's like, you know, the Raptors playing like, I don't know, like Atlanta or Detroit or something. I guess not Detroit now because Gacy is coaching them, but. Yeah, something like Atlanta, and, you know, it's one of those nights, and you're like, oh, I can go see a movie. So I guess that's my answer.
For me, this is funny. I always pick this show, so this is funny. Grey's Anatomy.
Wow.
I can't keep a straight face. I'm dying here. I can't wait a minute. All right, composure. I got into that show, I don't know, 4 years ago. It's actually really entertaining. Don't judge me. But it's one of my top shows. It's actually still live on TV. I think tonight's the season 15 premiere. I stopped watching after like season 11. So don't get me wrong. I'm not like still actively watching it. They killed off my character. I'm done. But it's a pretty entertaining show. I like doctor shows. And it's got a little romance, a little pizzazz to it. But, you know, I'd probably still watch the Raptors over the show now.
Yeah, this honestly now it's starting to get tough. Like Corey and I have gone through like 20 plus TV shows, and like, yeah, you only like so many, and you only have so many shows that you actually really like. So I feel like I misplaced my shows on the series so far. So now,
Dick, I was thinking, I was making the list today when we're like preparing for this pod. I was like, damn, I was like, I used a couple shows way too early. I think I used on like 12 or 13, like way too early.
Yeah. And now I'm like really struggling. So I have to like go to cartoons. So don't judge me on this. I'm going with a classic. I'm a huge Marvel guy. So like the X-Men cartoon is like one of my favorite things ever. And I can still watch as an adult. And I guess that would be something I would put up there if they were to like remake that and bring a comeback. But like I said, I probably used the wrong shows and I really only have a couple of my favorites left, but that's for another day. Corey brought this up before. Jimmy Butler to the Raptors. Do you think it's any type of possibility or just, you know, speculation?
1% chance. Yeah.
Better than zero.
I won't give you a zero because anything is possible. But yeah, it's really, really, really low because being realistic, any trade package for Butler is probably going to have to center around Ibaka. And we know that Minnesota is not high on Ibaka. They weren't high on him a couple of years ago. And the Raptors, like almost every other team that's been trying to trade for Butler, are going to be offering low ball deals. They aren't going to be good trades. And, you know, I can see the max I can see the Raptors going to is offering, you know, Ibaka and DeLon Wright as a young guy, as a sweetener, and then a pick. And then probably, like, I guess, one of the mid-level wing guys, like CJ or Norm or Danny Green. So that would kind of be the package. Like, they're not getting Kyle Lowry. They're not going to get OG. They're not going to get Siakam. Those aren't the type of deals that the Raptors are going to be offering. And, you know, because they're sort of in, like, they're in a win-win scenario there. I mean, they're going to offer those low-ball deals and, you know, if it got accepted, great, they would go with that. But, I mean, they don't need to make another big move like that. They're kind of already set for this season, at least in terms of, like, attempting to get to the finals. I mean, the Raptors acquiring Jimmy Butler might put them closer to the Warriors. I don't know how much closer it actually puts them to the Warriors. Probably not as close as a lot of people think. But, there's so many other teams that can make better offers than the Raptors at this point. Like, if you told somebody just in general that the Raptors are going to, in 2018, be offering, you know, Serge Ibaka as the centerpiece for a deal for Jimmy Butler, I mean, come on, they're going to laugh you off the street kind of thing. So, yeah, I see it way more likely that a team like Miami or, you know, the Clippers are going to be able to make a reasonable deal for Jimmy Butler than the Raptors are.
What are your thoughts on Jimmy Butler and the Raptors, Corey? It's pretty similar, Josh.
I mean, if you throw in OJ and Anunoby and Ibaka, I think that'd be like one of the only ways you could make it work. You'd have to give up OG, I think, in any deal. I'd probably give it less than a 5% chance. I just don't see lightning striking twice, I should say, for the Raptors. I think if they somehow went into this season with Larry, Butler, and Kawhi Leonard, I'd be like all in on this team winning the East, just from star power standpoint. I shouldn't say that because the Celtics roster is just crazy. I don't know. I'll give it less than 5% chance. I think it'd be a good move for them to make. But then again, you know, Leonard and Butler then aren't, you know, signed to the future. So then you have two guys who could possibly walk, and that would be a doomsday scenario if they both left and you got rid of OG for Butler.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You don't want to be selling the farm with the young guys. That's why I think, like, the Raptors just won't include those guys in the deal. Including somebody like a DeLon Wright is as far as they're going to go because of those reasons. There is a chance that Kawhi Leonard leaves. And also just because, like, I don't know about you guys, and like I know a lot of people think about, I talk about, like, you don't necessarily need to have guys liking each other to win and all that stuff. But like, there's got to be a lot of people looking at the scenario in Minnesota right now and being like, I don't know how I feel about Jimmy Butler as a culture guy. And for a team that just, you know, they got a brand new head coach and they brought in a guy who's notoriously a silent superstar, adding another guy who just was feuding with, other young guys on his team because he was mad they weren't working hard enough. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that just as a fit, especially when your two top guys can leave in the summer. Like, I think that's just a little bit maybe too much of a risk. even just from a culture standpoint. Like, it concerns me as a fan anyway.
No, for sure. It's like the contract and the fact of chemistry. I think you do need some type of chemistry to win a championship, but that's for another podcast. Josh, big thanks for hopping on Talking Raptors. Tell them where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at Halvolution, and you can find my work at Raptors Republic, occasionally B-Ball Breakdown, and we talked a little bit about movies. So if you're a movie fan, I write about movies occasionally as well at Scene Creek. And you can read reviews and stuff like that there. So that's where you can find my stuff.
And he does it all. Now, and Corey, as always, a pleasure talking hoops with you. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Check out the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.